Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. I have a very special guest this week who I think you're going to enjoy. His name is Hershey Felder, and in case you're not sure about him, he is the man who is currently does one-man shows, and I think he's the best there is at a one-man show for what he does. His Beethoven, As I Knew Him, is one of the great pieces of theater I've seen. Hello, Hershey.
Hey, nice. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
What I am amazed about is your process when you do a one-person show, because you do music besides acting.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us how Beethoven came to be?
Well, in terms of the one-man show itself, it generally comes with, as most things do, I think, with an idea. I really try to come up with a story that I want to tell. And in the case of Beethoven, I knew I wanted to do something with his music, but I really didn't know much else. I didn't know what else I could do that would really tell his story. And so I had to look, and I spent a lot of time actually writing other scripts that never saw the light of day because they didn't have the storytelling capacity. I knew I couldn't keep an audience with them. One was playing 10 different characters from Beethoven's life, commenting at his funeral. Another one was just playing Beethoven, but you know, it gets a little bit difficult when all you can stand on stage is a scream at the audience because you can't hear anything, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes a very difficult problem. The question with Beethoven is what does one really want to tell? What story is important to tell? And to me, the most touching thing, the most important thing, was that here was a man who, for most of his life, was deaf, which is a terrible thing in and of itself. But if you're deaf and you perhaps have the greatest gift of music and composition that has ever existed in Western music, somehow it compounds the problem.
I was very
touched by the fact that he didn't stop composing and that he was able to put his energy and his anger and his fury and his love into his art, which is a very touching idea, you know, that a man will not give up and continues because art is so important. And I think that was an important story to tell. How do you tell that story? It turns out that this is one of those things that's happenstance, and it's thanks to the libraries, to the internet, where you can go and scout around and see what's out there. And I found one story that is largely attributed to being pretty much the only eyewitness account that's longer than a few pages about Beethoven. And I said, well, if it's an eyewitness account and it really happened, why wouldn't the public want to know? And so I thought, well, let's go with this. And that's how the process begins. And then, of course, the process begins with writing an actual play, after having looked at the plot points, in this case, dramatizing this actual book, and then choosing the music and making it work together. And, you know, it's one of those things that basically takes 2 years until you really can get on stage and, as you say, keep the audience quiet for 2 hours.
Well, one of the things that I thought was so great about it was totally different than the movie.
Well, yeah. I mean, of course. You know, there's several movies about Beethoven, but all the movies seem to think that they need to make stuff up to make it interesting. And I think there is something viable in that, provided you make it into a fantasy. Where I have the issue with a movie making a fantasy but not saying that it is that it pretends that it's real, but I know better. So I'm a hard customer, because mm-hmm. I know that it's not. But I love the fantasy, the notion of let's make up this fantasy of what it may have been like, which is basically what I do. But I also indicate that it's a fantasy. You can't indicate. And plus, when you're on stage and you're doing this kind of piece and you're playing and acting and singing and playing characters, nobody says this is real because, you know. But I love the fact that we're going into what really happened. I love the fact that this is an eyewitness account and this is a real person's story. And whether what he says is absolutely true or whether what he says is through his own rose-colored glasses doesn't matter, because he was there and he's telling it, and
yeah,
this is the way he told it.
Yeah, and it gives it an impact. Yes.
It gives it an impact, and it's a very touching look into an artist, because you get it through somebody who was around them. And I think being around a great artist is a very thrilling thing, but it also humanizes them in a way that is my intention. You know, Beethoven was only Beethoven many years after he died. Sure, he was great Beethoven while he was alive, but, you know, it's a testament to who he really was that here we are a couple hundred years later still talking about him, listening to his music. And
well, besides, you know, the story being compelling, and your acting is fantastic.
Thank you.
You move... Actually, it's more than three characters. You have three main characters.
Three main characters who tell the story, but they sort of go in and out of all kinds of things depending on the needs of the script.
But, you know, I found myself and the other people in the audience, we saw those characters.
It's funny, isn't it? That's a testimony to your talent.
Oh, yeah.
I've heard about that, you know, because I only know what I'm doing. I don't know what people are responding to. I just know what I'm doing to make it happen, and I figure, okay, maybe it works. They're quiet, or they're sleeping, but you know, no, they're not, of course they're not sleeping, but I know what I'm doing technically, but there's no way. I mean, any artist who tells you that they can tell you what's coming out on the other side and what people, they can't. It's not possible. I've been told that it feels like different people are walking on the stage.
It does.
And I thought, well, I guess that's a good thing. That's fun.
Well, and that mesmerizing of the audience that you attain is, there's very few people around that can do that.
Well, you know, it's interesting. What does that? Is it just the story? Is it the person delivering the story? Is it the style? It's what I'm beginning to understand, most importantly, is that storytelling is of utmost importance, and people want to listen and they want to hear. Mm-hmm. And if you connect to them, it's by treating them as very intelligent and not talking down to an audience and not pretending that you're smarter, but they are one of you and you are one of them.
Yeah.
And if you talk to them and not at them or show them, and it's a fine line between when you're on stage, you have to do a show. I mean, let's face it, you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a very fine line between doing show and really talking to them as if they're right there with you, listening, and you're not acting for them. You're just talking to them.
And you achieve that. But you're also instructing. One of the things is that you're teaching, like in Beethoven, you're teaching them about key of C minor and some of this technique.
Which is fun.
And you have a real talent for that, and you make it understandable for the non-musician.
Well, I think that's the goal. You know, it's an interesting concept, this notion of, you know, why are you, you know, telling things that musicians have known for 400 years? And I said, that's the operative word. Musicians have known them for 400 years, but the public doesn't. And I think the public above all loves to learn. You know, and what's interesting, it's so funny. Musicians will sit and talk about a key change, a this, a that, for, you know, hours on end. And they somehow think the public doesn't, either can't understand or is too, everybody can understand. To do is a different story.
Correct.
Actually doing it and making it happen physically requires a whole other set of talents and abilities and lifelong study, but...
Well, that's what you do so well, is when you start talking about it and then you put those hands on the ivory.
And you show them.
Yeah.
But the thing is in the showing, you can make it understood. It's not rocket science. And even rocket science can be understood. Doesn't mean that everybody has the capacity to create the next rocket, but it can be at least translated into a basic understanding of what's actually going on. And I don't think you think back 200 years, 100 years, even 120 years, even 60 years, music education was of prime importance. You know, if we think back to the beginning of recorded sound, so let's say 1920s and 1930s when the radio was in the home, but if we think back to the turn of the century before that, how did people entertain? They had sewing circles and they had, everybody played piano.
Yeah.
Everybody sang.
Sheet music.
Everybody,
right?
Played an instrument. Sheet music was the way we buy records today.
That's how Gershwin got his start.
Exactly.
Right?
It's how we play a record today, a CD, a podcast, you know. Those days it was sheet music and stories and people read aloud. And that was the way things went. And somehow in all of this, we've forgotten how important that is. And we sort of are a passive audience. We're a passive people. You know, we sit, we watched, and movies are getting louder and louder. And what I have understood is that people can't hear anymore. And here's what I think you're talking about with people sit and listen to me. There's no magic. But if you go to most entertainment nowadays, you're a reviewer, you see everything.
Yes,
between
I do.
Films and theater. Things are getting louder and louder as time goes on. It's
I'm doing less and less films because of that.
You can't sit in them, even if it's a play-like film, a piece of artistic cinema. It's so loud, it's unbearable. And here, even sitting with 600 people, to just talk to them, here's what I think happens, is that they remember what it means to have human communication without that pumped-up, steroidal sound that just blows their brains out, and they go, this is what it means to be human. This is what it was like.
Yeah, let me add, folks, and, you know, that there's no microphones in your shows.
No, of course
it's
not.
It's all natural sound.
It's natural, and it's the most important thing is to make it beautiful and present with natural sound. And, you know, if you go back to Beethoven's time, you know, it was perfect sound. And people were actually able to hear. They were hear details and small nuances, things that we've totally forgotten because now you go to a movie, if it's not really loud, you miss it. I mean, I don't, and you don't. No. But I have maintained something very scary, and I'm willing to bet we're going to see it in the next 20 years. We're going to see a rise in deafness among young people.
Oh, I agree, especially now with all these... all the kids have these things in their ear.
Ears,
and when I take the train, and I can hear it four rows away.
I very rarely, if I'm on an airplane and I have to work, I will put in a set of plugs to listen. And I will be very careful about how the volume, or just enough to hear. But people now, they stick these things in their ears, and they blow their brains out. Yeah. And so I think, and not to mention people with the cell phones, with the Bluetooth, with, you know, how this is going, it can't not affect hearing. It just can't. Yeah. I mean, will it improve it? Make the hearing stronger? I somehow am not sure. So I fear that in the next 20 and 30 years, everything is going to get louder because people can't hear anymore.
Yeah. And it'd be nice, if you're an engineer out there, folks, you better start learning how to make high-intensity hearing aids, because you'll sell a lot of them.
Well, if you look around, how many people crossing 50 and 60 are starting to wear hearing aids?
Yeah.
They can't hear anymore.
Thank God, knock on wood, I can still hear real well.
Yeah, knock on wood. And look, it's something that happens to people.
But I think you make a strong point of why shows like yours have such a fantastic impact. We are crying, starving for interpersonal communication.
That's it. You sit in front of your screen all day long. But the communication is typing to or Skyping to this image that sort of, you know, is a bunch of digitized dots. And just to sit and talk to somebody, it's an art that doesn't happen much anymore. And also I think it's a sign of the times. People are on the make, not because they're bad, but people have to live. And so many of us, I find myself included in this, I have to watch out for it, to sit down and just enjoy good conversation, company, you know, without being on the make, what job can I get out of this? You have to remember to do it.
Yes.
Because for the most part, or young people want to go out and get drunk because life is so hard. I mean, it ain't easy. And, you know, granted, we talk about the dumbing down of art and something, but I have to tell you, you know, I'm 41 now. People who are young people, which I used to be one, have so much more to deal with than they did 100 years ago and 200. Think of the amount of information now.
Yeah, the pace of life.
There's so much information.
But that's why your art and art like yours, the live theater, is so important.
Yeah, well,
it's our way of escaping.
I don't intend to.
I mean, you
stop.
Come to your show for an hour and 35 minutes, you're in Beethoven's world.
You know, you're in Vienna and you're in the 1800s, and that's the intention. And it works, and it's fun doing it. So I have a good time. It's hard work. I'm tired all the time. You know, people think there's a lot of glamour associated with this kind of thing. Not so, as you well know. It's work. It's work. You're always running, coming, going, practicing, you know. Nervous because today the finger is not working as well as it should. I mean, there's always something. So It's just
well, you're to be congratulated, folks. The Beethoven Show, as I said earlier, I have never seen anyone who can hold an audience like you do, Hersey.
That's very kind.
And it started. Let's go back. It started with the Gershwin Show.
Yeah.
Tell us about that, because that everyone knows every song, and it ends up a sing along, doesn't it?
Well, it is. How could it not? I heard people singing in the audience. I said, it was on Broadway. I heard people singing. I said, I guess you really want to sing, don't you? And so we started to sing, and it became a thing. Now everybody and their brother is doing sing-alongs. But you have to be very intuitive with the audience to know how it works, to make it work.
Well, I remember back when you, at the Royal George, when you brought it here to Chicago, did that just sort of happen, or
what?
Or the sing-along part at the end?
Not in Chicago. By that time, I was doing it properly.
It was pretty well established.
Yeah. It was established in 2001 in New York. And
but
I said,
what was so great with the Gershwin is you covered his entire life, too.
And you have to do it fast, and you have to do it well, but you have to leave the audience thinking about things, and that was the goal. And, you know, every now and then I'll get somebody who says, well, yeah, but wasn't there more? I'm going, think about it. Think about the information that I've offered you and put the pieces together. And that's what I like to do. That I, you know, every now and then you'll get a criticism that says, well, why couldn't you tell more stuff? I said, first of all, there isn't more stuff. And second of all, the important thing to note is that I don't think any of these characters would say more. It's up to you to figure it out. What's intriguing to me, what's fun to me, is to spend an hour and a half with somebody and then go, well, they didn't tell me everything, so what else is going on there? Mm-hmm. You know, okay, they gave me clues. I know this happened and this happened. This. I never have been fond of drama that lays the whole thing out for you. It's just not my taste. It's not what I like. And there are people who do it. There are people who think that that's what make great theater. I personally feel it's kind of insulting to the audience, but that's my taste.
No, I agree with you.
It's my taste.
You don't have to spell everything out.
Yeah, but there are people who want it spelled out because they don't want to sit and figure things out. And I'm thinking part of the fun is going somewhere and thinking, what else is going on?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what are they, what's the subtext of all this? What are they not telling me? And that's the fun. And that's what I think people take away. And that's what I love, you know?
Well, I mean, if I was to summarize one of the lessons from each of your shows is Beethoven, you go into detail explaining how he put emotion, your personal emotion, into the music.
Mm-hmm.
And how that revolutionized music.
Absolutely.
And you make such a strong case for that. And the whole culture, because after Mozart, after Beethoven, it all changed.
But all Western culture changed because of him doing that. Poetry, art, it became, you know, it basically became the Romantic movement.
Yeah.
That, you know, and we don't think of it that way because we think Romantic is a flowers and a candelabra on a piano. You know, we sort of cheapened it. But no, the Romantic movement actually started with Beethoven. And it was this notion of being emotionally involved in what you're writing. And it's just not by a set of rules that entertains. Isn't that beautiful music? No, music exists as an extension of the human being. And it started with him. It really did. And the people who then came, I mean, it all sort of happened at the same time.
And you got that concept. You got me researching it, and boy, you are absolutely right.
It's absolutely true.
Yeah.
Absolutely the case.
And then with Chopin, you pointed out that when you did the Chopin show, which again, I thought was brilliant.
It's fun. Yeah.
And it's musically so strong, is that he was a very shy person and he communicated through his music, through
right.
piano playing.
He told his story.
Get along with people too well.
Not he wasn't easy. But, you know, he was charming, he was funny, but he wasn't easy. But he told everything in his music about who he is. And it's not specific, like when he's in a bad mood, he plays this music. It's just you get the sense of his soul in the music, which is in Gershwin. You get a lot of, you know, you clearly get a lot about Gershwin in his music. Because it's he wants attention. It's attention grabbing.
Yeah, he wanted fame, right?
He wanted fame. He was a guy who wanted fame.
But he also wanted to combine jazz, classical music, and the Broadway.
He wanted to speak new, you know. And he was he was able to meld everything into, can't say a melting pot, but whatever he turned out, it was purely Gershwin, and that's what's amazing. Yeah. Very amazing.
But see, that's the essence. So the essence of each of these three, you have captured.
I try, you know.
You have more than succeeded.
Thank
in
you
that.
Very much.
And I got a couple questions now. I know you've been here in Chicago at the Royal George. You've introduced the Beethoven Show. Mm-hmm.
Well, here we're at the Drury, but yeah.
Pardon?
Now we're at the Drury Lane.
At the Drury,
right. The Royal George.
We're at Royal George before. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. But now that show, that's the third part, and you'd said earlier that to me that there's a fourth part coming. Well,
the coda, the finale, as it were, is coming.
Okay,
yes.
Is coming. So we'll stay tuned for that. Have you ever planned on doing the three shows, like one after another? Like
I
on
have
a weekend?
Actually.
Barb?
I have. I've done the three shows in repertory. I was in several theaters, but. You know, one of the things that happens, which is complicated, is the public wants to see one. And so they start coming and then they get confused. So we've decided to stick with the show we're playing while we're playing it.
Okay.
Because what ends up happening is that it becomes an event rather than going to the theater. You know, oh, go see Hirschfeld to do three plays. And it's hard. And I've done it.
I was going to say, it's got to be a...
I've done it. It's fun.
On you, it's got to be really great.
Oh, it's hell. But you know, but it's fun. It's a great challenge. But by the same token, makes me tired. But you know, look, if not now, when?
Yeah. So it just works better to do them in stretches.
I like it that way.
Yeah.
I think the public does too, because then a couple of weeks later they get to come back to something else. And
well, all those who went to Beethoven will
come back to Gershwin
for the Gershwin.
Yeah, and they are, so it's kind of nice.
Great. So what are you planning from here on in? Because
secret.
okay, that's well. What about some of the operas? I was looking up some of the things that you wrote. Noah's Ark and opera.
Yeah, well, I've got Lincoln. I'm working on a Lincoln piece.
On a Lincoln piece?
That's fun. Yeah, that's already had its premiere, which is kind of nice in Los Angeles. And now I'm going to develop it and see what I do next with it. But it's a nice piece, you know.
Okay, and you also did the song settings, the poetry of Asher
Lindsay. Yeah.
Tell us about song settings.
I found the poetry of Asher Lindsay, and I kind of loved it, and I thought. I'd love to set a few of those to music. So that's really what it was, you know. And just, you know, song settings. There's compositions and concerti and so on and so forth. So I'm enjoying my composing life again, which I let go of. Well, I never let go of it, but I let go of it publicly while I was so busy with Gershwin. And then as Chopin came back, as one lady asked me in an audience and a questionnaire a few probably a year ago, she said, so now you've done all these three composers. I know you're a composer yourself. Did you learn anything?
Well, what's the answer to that?
Of course you do, you know, with every phrase, every note, every everything. And now I got to get ready again.
Yes,
so.
You do. Well, last question for you is, at the heart of all of these shows, you talk about the passion that these greats have had.
Right.
And I know you have that passion.
I guess. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's hard to talk about oneself. Of course I have the passion. I love music more than anything. I love theater more than anything. And I love talking to people more than anything. But it's honest that, you know, I don't, it isn't just a show. It's about communicating with people. It isn't about doing a show by selling tickets. Sure, that's part of the business. Mm-hmm. But the truth is what I really love is spending time with people and enjoying being with them. It's fun. It's really fun.
So you don't go to work. You
oh,
go
yeah,
to
I
have
do.
Fun.
I do, and I whine a lot, and it's hurt, and my back hurts, and my feet hurt, and everything hurts. But you know, I'm constantly whining about how awful this is up until such a point where I, you know, get on the stage, and then it all disappears, and it's just great fun.
Last question. What advice would you give to young performers who are thinking about doing a one-person show?
Never stop working and never stop believing. Two simple things.
And just keep going.
And on three things, listen very carefully to what people say.
Okay.
And use a sieve and know that certain things, be smart. If people ask me, what do you think your real talent is? My real talent is knowing when to listen. You know? Because not everybody has a good idea. But you have to listen. Because if you want to communicate to a public, you have to hear what they need to know. Doesn't mean that one needs to do it the way they tell you, you know, because that's not why you're an artist. But if you're not communicating something, then the exercise is pointless. And so, you know, I had an artist who recently told a, you know, asked a similar question. Well, it's a difficult thing. And if you can't do something else, do if it's the only thing you wake up in the morning want to do. Well, that's nonsense. Of course, it's the only thing you want to do when you wake up in the morning. And if you really want to do it, do it. And the world will tell you if you can or you can't professionally. But more importantly, I am a big promoter of the fact that art must always be pursued because it's what makes us human. You know, and if you have to get a day job to keep your night fun, well, do so. But don't ever stop being an artist, because it's a great form of expression and it makes all the difference in the world to a life.
Those are great words. I couldn't agree with you more.
Thank you.
And you are creating art, and you are entertaining us, and you are enlightening us.
Thank you very much. Very kind.
Folks, any Hersey Felder show that's out there, just go and see. You are going to be amazed.
And I'll send you the bill for the PR. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. And folks, go see a play this week.